I want to thank the forum, Darren, Caltrout, for, this is a great way to share ideas and to seek scientific validation. And it is my great pleasure to talk about the pipe mound and an index reach of the South Fork Eel River and kind of how the Eel River Recovery Project has been involved in trend monitoring and where we would like to go in terms of management and adaptive management on pike minnow in an important reach in South Fork. So the Recovery Project has been a 501c3 since 2016, in existence since 2012, and we're a solutions-based. We're not an advocacy group. So we scope the community repeatedly, identify needs, find resources, implement projects, monitor, and then do feedback. Try to empower communities throughout the eel, get them in harmony with nature. We actually had our founding meetings in 2011 in Fortuna, Redway, and in Willits, and in Fortuna, they still called them squawfish. And they said, squawfish, they have to go. Bring back the derbies was very popular. But we didn't get a budget until 2016 from the Salmon Restoration Association, and that's when we began our involvement. And so, you know, you're aware the pike minnow introduced in 1979 or in that time frame, 83, 86, it spread throughout the eel. By the time I helped put together surveys in 1993, there was 180,000 pike minnow over 10 inches in length in the reach that we surveyed. It was lengthy, it was 140 miles, but they'd really taken over the river. They'd risen exponentially without limit, and the altered ecosystem after the 64 flood actually released suckers, and then the pike minnow were predaceous and were then the king bee of the warmed ecosystem. And you know, we went to Dr. Brett Harvey, who I respect a great deal, being one of the foremost authorities, and he said that evidence showed that the Upper South Fork was a place that was known to be both a source of salmonids and a major kind of predation station for pike minnow. So that's how we decided to set up our index reach there. And we began collecting baseline data in 2016, and then we collected trend data 2017-2018. I'll present that in brief shortly here. But also Dr. Harvey pointed us to the work of Ryman and Beamsurfer in the Columbia River that suggested that if you reduced pike minnow that you could increase recruitment of juvenile salmonids. And so this is the reach, the Hermitage, which is right where Rattlesnake Creek comes in, and the South Fork from upstream here is wild. It's got wilderness on both sides, and then it's down in the hole, so even though this reach parallels 101, you're still in the wild. This is the mouth of Cedar Creek, the Gombe Monastery, that's where you, in the first day, and then the second day is Gombe to Standish, walk, swim, crawl, 6 miles a day. That's why Pat stays in the gym, trying to keep this one down. And we do good science. This is the report from our 2016 dive where we collected baseline data, and we have a team of 6 divers, and when the South Fork eel is at base flow under 100 CFS at the legged gauge, we can go abreast and we count the fish. We don't bother with the fish under 4 inches. You can mistake them for roach. They're like white noise. Their survival's in question. So our size classes were 4 to 8, 8 to 14, 14 to 18, and greater than 18, which were the size classes adopted by Fish and Game. Experienced dive crews, so University of California, Berkeley, Phil always brings an all-star cast. They're like otters themselves in the water. Fish biologist Zane has come and helped us, brought seasonal aids, and also seasoned volunteers from the Recovery Project, some present. So there's the query, undoubted, you know, strong burgundy purple stripe, very distinctive once you start to kind of recognize their characteristics over 4 inches in length. The roach and the pike minnow, much more subtle distinctions, and so you can waste a lot of time and lose a lot of precision on the size classes that matter, the ones that eat all the fish. So here are our data, and this isn't like counting Chinook in this pool out here, where you have schools of hundreds go under you, and it's a relatively rough approximation. I think these are fairly precise counts, And what you see here is not that many fish in this highly predatory range. And so that was a good thing to see. Also, salmon is dominated by Rattlesnake Creek and down to Glendale. It was pretty much salmonid world and less dominated by pike minnow than I'd expected. So then we went back at it in 2017. And what you're seeing here is that this is the 2013 to 2015 year class. So these highly predaceous fish in these larger size ranges were increasing in 2017 versus 2016. And so that's kind of a demographic shift in the population. And we got 1441 in the first year and 1173 in the second. And this is kind of how they stack up if you put them next to each other. So this is kind of the harbinger. This is your 2013-2015 year class, and they're going into the larger predator category. And we went back at it in 2018. And you know, because 16 inches to me is like a key length for that big change in predation, we changed size classes. I kind of regret that because it makes it a little more difficult to compare between years. But still, we see the number of 16-inchers is increasing. It was up to 157. We have about 400 fish over 12 inches. So this is really what's putting the most pressure on salmon and steelhead. This is right in the middle of the refuge here for Kobo. From Indian Creek or maybe Sprout Creek up to the headwaters of the South Fork is the last functional male population for Kobo salmon in northwestern California. And so this is the heart and soul of rock and roll for coho and predation. And also, it's a major source of Chinook and steelhead in those upper reaches as well. So this presents a threat. And the more of those fish in that larger size class, the more of a threat. So what we found in every year, these are the 2016 results. But right below the put-in, there's a big ridge that comes down, and it forms a pool that's 40 feet deep. 26 pike minnow over 18 inches the first year. This aggregation holds true every year. Then right above Gombe, up around a little bit above Big Dan Creek is a second pool. And then there's one just below Gombe, very convenient for the second day of depletion if we ever get there. And then the most convenient is Highway 1. And you can slap on some Polaroids and watch for traffic and go out on Highway 1. And there's always like 50 big ones there. And they're smart. They won't take hook and line. That's your range in the population. Strong recruitment, changing demographics. Larger adults concentrated in four pools. That makes them vulnerable to depletion. And it's desirable not only for at-risk salmonid species. You can't find many suckers up here. There's huge holes in the population in terms of recruitment, and they used to be the dominant fish in the river. Sculpin are similarly afflicted, and the gut samples from Brett's work says that 20% of the lamprey, or 20% of the pike minnow diet throughout the basin is lamprey. So that would also allow them to be increased. There's an otter having fun. And I believe that there's been an equilibrium where the otter population has grown to take advantage of the pike minnow population, and that there's somewhat of a stasis. Because I believe that's also why you're only finding pike minnow around tangled large wood jams and in the deepest pools. And so this is NIMS Coho Recovery Plan. Pike minnow are bad news, recognizes predators of coho. Their reduction is desirable. And, fix Lurio River too. I like that. But Bermster von Reimann, John Day Reservoir, Columbia River. 20% reduction in large adults, 50% reduction in juvenile salmon and steelhead. Well, if we know there's like 150 or 200 pike minnow over 16 inches, and we took 100, it was more than half. What are we reducing the population, the predation on juvenile salmonids? And then I just like threw a few numbers at the wall. Do they eat 300 a year, and we took 100? Or do they eat 1,000 a year? So this is the equivalent of like a hatchery output. So I think there's going to be tremendous benefit. And the other native fish species, they need relief from predation. We need to make sure. I mean, if suckers suck algae, and algae dries food webs, I mean, you can't just lose them. So, I've actually navigated the website of the California Department of Fish and Game, formidable as it was. I have applied for a scientific collector's permit, and this is what we want to do. We want to take 16 inches or larger out of the four pools in 2020. I'm not mechanical, I wouldn't shoot a gun, if I operate power tools, I'm at risk. So all of this of like taking these fish out of the water, that will rely on people with that capacity. But I can tell you, they are legion, and they have my phone number, and I have their number. And this can be done. And you put up block nets at the end, and you go in when it's low, but not before you get swimmer's itch, or before you get swimmer's itch. And then we want to do this with trend monitoring and provide data for adaptive management, because I believe that the science shows that this can put a hole in the pike minnow population. This can have beneficial use for knocking down predation on native fishes. And so this is kind of the language from my permit application. These are inland non-native fish. And so a secondary objective is the big ones are females. So if you keep putting a hole in the population of the big females, then that's got to knock down their ability to reproduce, or I would think. But you have to look out for things like predation and reduced predation and a possible release of the pike minnow population. So all of these, you know, hypotheses or alternative hypotheses need to be, you know, looked at. But this is very focused, and we have baseline data, so I think it's scientifically justifiable. And the methods, a Hawaiian sling is what I understand Brett used for a lot of, you know, his collection of adults. The dive community may have variations on spear types. I am not versed in that realm. Block nets. All these folks will also be extremely well versed in terms of like, well, first, there's not going to be any salmonids there, because this is a period in the river here where it's 75 to 80 degrees Fahrenheit. And so, therefore, there's no chance of interception of adult salmonids. And our divers would, you know, are trained to distinguish between 30 species and the reefs around here locally, so they can tell the difference. And also, again, the native sucker. And when depletion was using explosives, it was about half suckers and half pike minnow back in the mid-90s. And so this is highly selective and won't even be impacting suckers. You know, I'd like to catch 200. I'm not sure there's 200 there. But our goal is to deplete them as fully as we can in this reach. And this is under the 1801 Cal Fish and Game Code, removal of non-native, invasive, or detrimental wildlife to improve, restore ecosystem, habitat, or conditions, or otherwise enhance the sustainability of non-native wildlife species or other species. And so I guess all of the ones we care about come in there somewhere. But the native fish community, the eel, is perturbed, and to reverse that or to control it would be good. And you know, really, there is a reduction in the population from the 90s, I believe, and a very substantial one, and I think it's suppressed disturbance from the otters. But we don't know that the otter population is going to be stable, and there is a potential for this non-native species to proliferate at any time, and to and therefore put greater risk and stress on the native fish community. And I think there's more risk and harm in not doing anything than taking the actions we're recommending. And here's my little philosophy quote for you to think about. Julian Huxley, probably 100 years ago today, said, like it or not, we're in charge of evolution. And the sooner we figure that out, the better off we'll be. And so in the case of the pike minnow, I agree with Brett. They're an amazing species. I admire their beauty with the golden flecks and the burgundy racing stripe. They're out of context. We need to take them down. And we can't. And there's not very many things in this basin that you could do that would have a similar effect. And whenever I've brought this up at you know, I go to the Summer Arts Fest, and people come up and then they go, pike minnow. Pike minnow. And I go, okay, tell me about it. And they go, I spear them. And there is a number of people throughout the basin, especially in those areas less populated, where this is sport. And it goes on. And they can tell the difference between native fishes and the pike minnow. And so I look at them as a way to put press disturbance on pike minnow basin wide. And more I see that they are restricted to very, very few habitats. And so I'm really looking forward to the Wiyot tribe doing experimental stuff with nets and with electrofishing. But I think in the deepest pools in the reach in question that I'm addressing, that spears are in. And Roloff's told me that dragging nets gets the squawks and going, or the pheromone from the squawfish, and so essentially they are going to be very difficult to net. And so there it is. It's an adaptive management and an offer for us to work in concert with the department. And you know what would be great for me is if I didn't need a permit from the department, and instead all we needed to do was coordinate the mechanism for the removal of these pike minnow and then continuing study. But since that doesn't seem to be forthcoming, I have applied, and so and I am in need of assistance. So if anybody has particular understanding in this realm of actually going to get these things with spears, I'm all ears. Thank you. A couple of quick questions before our break, if people want to engage. Vivian.
In 1991, the commercial fisherman from Fort Bragg with disaster relief money gill-netted fish in the pike minnow in the deep pools in the Middle Fork. They snorkeled first to make sure there were no suckers, and then they gill-netted those pools. They released some with radio tags and discovered what Mr. Harvey did, that they were going out at night and hunting in the shallows. And they even found a market for those fish in the city. But I can't find that study. So if anybody else knows where it is, it was done in conjunction with the Department of Fish and Game and Wildlife. And the gill nets were apparently effective at that time.
Pike minnow are patchy on the Middle Fork, but they're sometimes opportunistically in pools that are stratified, so they're there with Adris salmonid juveniles. But otters are getting pretty good on the Middle Fork.
Yeah, Pat, I appreciate you trying to tie this back to the drought years. I thought about that a lot, having lived through that, the project management and whatnot. I'm still trying to figure out what the real age structure of these fish are. Are there formal references in the meal? I mean, I'm hearing stories about pike minnow living 20, 30 years. Brett, anyone else? Do we have a good handle on really how fast
Phil?
Or how...
Phil thought he saw the Nautilus somewhere around the mouth of Jordan Creek. How big was the pike minnow you saw? You said you saw a pike minnow that was like over 3 feet.
There's some roughly 3 feet.
So I believe that some of these pike minnow could start to... I saw them in the Rising River when I was doing my graduate work, and some of them were like 36 to 40. I mean, they get to be extremely large. It looked like the Spanish Armada. And so I do believe that they can get to be. But, you know, I also think that the conditions in the eel and the press disturbance from the otters, it may limit their longevity. And see, that'll be a fascinating thing, to get all these pike minnow and then to have their otoliths analyzed by Humboldt and, like, more gut studies. Because, you know, there's a gap in science since Brett and Rod did all of that work in the eel.
There's no formal work on aging, though, that anyone's aware of in the eel.
By the way, I'm also of another age like Brett, and I have in paper all my reports with me.
So if I go back and look at like population studies, returns of Chinook or steelhead in the eel, I've never seen where the populations decrease as pike minnow populations increase. I don't understand where that's at, because if I go back and look at the Eel River Action Plan, even, it looks like Chinook numbers have increased since the 70s, not decreased. So Where's that correlation between increased Pike Minnow populations and decreased Samurai populations?
A lot of the Chinook are in are rebounding in areas like the Middle Fork and the Black Butte, where I don't think that Pike Minnow are, they're kind of at a lower ebb, I think because of the vulnerability to predation in those reaches from otters. And there's, but overall, what's driving Chinook recovery is the bed of the eel. It's mostly all the sand's gone. And so hundreds of miles are now optimal spawning habitat for juvenile Chinook. And I put together like flows in the key periods for spring. And I believe if you're at like less than 1,000 cubic feet per second on May 1 at Fort Seward, you got a problem. You're getting a lot of juvenile Chinook getting chomped by pike minnow. And I don't think that pressure is even throughout the basin because the distribution of pike minnow is not even.
Okay, so we're out of time. We're going to stay on time today. So we have a break, though, for 10 minutes. Everybody has a cell phone, right? Whether your cell phone says 11:38, start coming back and sitting down. So we can start. We're going to start at 11:40. So thank you.